Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tortoise. Hello, and a very warm welcome to a special live edition of Trendy in Tortoise's Newsroom. So, I'm John Curtis.
And I'm Rachel Wolfe. Last week was the local election, so this week we are going to make sense of what happened for councillors, for police and crime commissioners, and for mayors, and also what it might mean next.
We're going to look, first of all, however, before we get into the minutiae of what happened last Thursday, a little bit about the historical record and what the historical record suggests we can and perhaps cannot tell about the national mood from last week's local elections and how the parties attempted to spin them. We'll then move on to the, particularly the mayoral and the PCC elections, because these are both relatively recent innovations. And perhaps it's time to ask, do they work? Do they actually add something to our constitutional litany? And then, crucially, we will look forward. What are the lessons? What are the implications? And I think Rachel and I are just basically going to chew the cud about the state of politics and what the parties might or might not do between now and November, because it looks now, does indeed look like November.
So, John, I mean, you have spent much of the last week dissecting the results. And as you said, it's not just about what happened now, but what analogies we might take from the past, 97, 2019, about what that might mean next. So how much can we tell from what happened in the local elections about what the public think and how strongly they think it compared to the past?
Okay, so this has become a subject of some note following the intervention of the Prime Minister on Monday morning when he decided to pick up a projection that was done for Sky and then for the Sunday Times on the basis of the local election results. So let's go back through this. I'm actually one of the people who started this game, I hate to tell you, way back in 1982, in which we said, well, okay, let's take the result, local election results. And in those days it was, let's take them, add them up into parliamentary constituencies and compare them with the last election. And from that we can project, you know, how well the parties might do in a general election. Now, the truth is, in those days, that was pretty okay, because the parties did tend to perform in local elections in pretty much the way that you would expect, given the current state of national opinion polls. But gradually over the years, that there's been a divergence. It actually began in the late 1980s, when you'll remember the Liberals and the SDP had a bit of a row. David Owen didn't want to merge. And at the formation of Liberal Democrats, you know, at one stage, they were down at 5% of the national opinion polls. Well, they never got that low in local elections. They still held on to a section of their local election base. And ever since, the Liberal Democrats have tended to do better in local elections than their current national polling poll standards. So you kind of need to discount that a bit. And then more recently, again, I was having to check the record the other day. I mean, back in the 80s and 90s, we kind of said on the basis of local elections, maybe others would get 5%. That was quite high. Well, since then, I mean, the Greens have become a quite substantial presence in local elections. There's been something of a revival of independence. Now, that's all a way of saying that whereas maybe 40 years ago, you could just add the results up and say, well, okay, this is what it clearly shows, is that now you have to be a bit more subtle. What does tend to happen in local elections is if a party is up in the polls as compared with 12 months ago, it tends to do better in the local elections. And if it's down in the polls, it tends to do worse in local elections. In other words, the ups and downs in party support tend to move, as it were, in parallel with the ups and downs of the parties, rather than as a mirror image. So therefore, that means that what you really need to focus on is not the levels, but the changes. And I think for a lot of this evening, that's basically what I'm going to want to talk about, because I think that's what's valuable. The exercise that Mr. Sunak latched onto was basically taking levels and saying, well, let's assume if the whole country were to vote in this way in a general election, what would happen? And the answer was a hung parliament. But that wasn't necessarily a forecast of what would happen in a general election.
I suppose it's worth spending a minute before we say what the change actually means about why it would be in Rishi Sunak's interest potentially to do that or try and do that. Because a lot of what happens before a local election is the media expectation game. How well can each political party set a level that they think they will beat? It must be said, for the last 2 years, the Conservatives have tried to do that and missed their own expectation setting.
We, of course, possibly couldn't lose 500 seats and you lose 474. Yes.
And what you should focus on is Ben Houchin and Andy Street.
Yep.
And you win one and you lose the other. So you have the expectation game before and then you have the spin after.
Yeah.
And what Sunak has obviously decided is that it is better for the Conservative Party's own prospects at the general election to raise the possibility of a hung parliament.
Now, why would that be, Rachel?
Well, I actually think this is not that obvious. So the reasons you would do it are because you believe that people will be frightened by the prospect of a coalition.
Particularly
between Labour,
perhaps Conservative voters.
And the SNP, the Conservative voters will be more frightened of that. Although I think you are dubious about this, right? You don't think this is...
Well, no. I mean, the point is there is a very, very specific historical backdrop to this, right? Which you'll remember, right? The 2015 general election. And you'll remember those posters of Ed Miliband in either Alex Salmond or Nicola Sturgeon's pocket. They were brilliant posters. And then when the Conservatives, contrary to their expectations, won an overall majority, they said, that's the reason. We managed to persuade people that they should vote for us, they should avoid the horrors of a hung parliament because of what we told them. Now, the truth is, I did do the boring data analysis at the time. And, you know, frankly, there were people, you could use this data set to identify people who at the beginning of the campaign did not think Labour would do a deal with the SNP. By the end of the campaign, had been persuaded. Was there a particular swing to the Tories amongst this group? Answer, no. But history is written by the winners. The Tories believed that was true. The Labour Party, by the way, also believed that is true. So all of a sudden, I think, you know, Mr. Sunak is, here's another lever to pull. Here's perhaps another way in which I can persuade some of those voters who just won't come back to us to come back to us. So that, I think this is what's going on.
It's not like he has a lot of good options. And I suppose the second reason that he might
seem to find many levers
this
to pull.
No, there are not many levers to pull. And there's not much at the end of each of the levers when he does pull them. And I suppose the second reason that he might do it is because he is talking to simultaneously a lot of very disaffected and angry activists and former local councillors.
Yep.
A lot of very disaffected and angry MPs who think they're about to lose their seat correctly.
Yep.
And he wants to persuade them that there is still enough of a fight to be had, that during the general election, he is not spending all of his time fending off attacks from his own side. But your original point is, this might have held in 1982. It does not hold in 2024.
It might have held in the past, but yeah, sure. I mean, it's not entirely clear that this is something that's going to particularly work at the moment, because the mood of the public, as we'll say a bit more at the moment, does the predominant mood of the public seems to be to want to see the back of the Conservative government. The bit that Labour claim, which is indeed that the public want to see change, and therefore he then goes on to say, and so therefore they're voting Labour. That, as we'll discuss, is the bit that can be challenged. Yes, some of them are voting Labour, but some of them are voting Green. Some of them are voting for independent candidates, particularly in wards with a relatively large number of Muslims. And some, indeed, in certain places are also voting Liberal Democrats. So, indeed, I think one of the things that we've been missing about our politics is we're so focused on this big continuing lead of Labour over the Conservatives that we've kind of not noticed that about one in three people are saying none of the above. They are saying Liberal Democrat or Green or Reform, which again we'll need to talk about, or indeed, you know, something else, SNP in Scotland. And I think
I'm not going to vote.
Or indeed, not going to vote. But the point is, our political system, having been quite heavily concentrated on the two parties in 2019, it's looking as though it's going to go back to being rather more fractured, a la 2010, a la 2015, etc.
So I suppose to divide these into questions, if the first question is, can you extrapolate directly from the local elections to the general election, which might say you have a hung parliament? No. One. Right. Two, does roughly what happened in the local elections, given the polls before, suggest you might have exactly the same kind of Labour majority that the national opinion polls were suggesting? Yeah. And I think your answer is yes.
Yeah, well, let's explain why, right? Because the point is that the change in party support, which is why I said matters, largely mirrors the expectations from the opinion polls. So, for example, with the local council elections, we can compare the results in lots of places with what happened last year directly. The opinion polls have essentially said, since over the last 12 months, nothing has changed. Certainly so far as the Labour lead over the Conservatives is concerned. If anything, the Conservatives down a bit more. But the one thing that has changed, they said, is the Reform are up. All right. What do we discover? Well, both the projections that I was involved with at the BBC in terms of the difference between where we thought the parties were standing this year and last year, and equally the ones that were done by Sky that Mr. Sunak latched onto other bits of, were basically saying the lead of the Conservatives over Labour is unchanged. Now, it's a smaller lead than in the opinion polls because the Labour Party doesn't do so well in local elections and people are voting for lots of other parties. But the fact that the lead was unchanged was affirmation of what the polls were saying. And indeed, pretty much everything that happened in terms of the number of seats that the Conservatives lost, the number of PCC positions they lost, what happened in the mayoral elections is basically exactly what you would have anticipated, given the absence of change last year. And of course, what's also true, however, it was the Conservatives' misfortune that they were, in terms of the baseline, the year when most of the seats that were being contested was last contested was 2021. That was a very good year for them. And yes, we see an enormous swing. So the ups and downs basically mirror that of the polls. And therefore, the crucial political message is Mr. Sunak's attempt to try to narrow the gap on Labour. These local elections suggest it has not made any significant progress in exactly the same way as the opinion polls have also been claiming.
So, no, there won't be a hung parliament. Yes, there is still a big Labour majority. And your third point, though, John, which is also, as we've been seeing from the polls for a long time, is that is because people are voting against a political party, but they are much more fractured about what they want in some ways instead, and their enthusiasm is very low.
Yeah, so the voting against becomes particularly evident when you are looking at the difference in the performance of the parties in wards that the Conservatives were defending against Labour and those they're defending against the Liberal Democrats. In wards that the Conservatives were defending against Labour, the Labour Party put in its best performance and the Liberal Democrat vote tended to be squeezed somewhat. And equally in wards where the Conservatives started off first and the Liberal Democrats were second, the Liberal Democrats put in their best performances and Labour's vote was not so advancing so much. Of course, in other words, there's anti-conservative tactical voting. Now, we saw this last year, but when's the last time that we saw tactical voting of this scale going on in local elections? Well, it was 1995 and 1996. And indeed, then, of course, you know what happened in 1997, but there was also a lot of tactical voting. So that's one of the ways in which there's still a lot of talk out there about the Labour Party might need a lead of 13, 14 points in order to get an overall majority of one. Well, anti-conservative tactical voting is one reason why they won't. What's been happening in Scotland might be another. The third reason, the Conservative vote is going down more heavily in places where they were previously strongest. That, again, was very, very clearly there in what was going on. It's almost an arithmetical inevitability. If your vote's down by 23 points, which is what the opinion polls are saying, there are lots of places where you don't have 23% to lose.
We're going to come back to what this means for the political parties and particularly what it might mean after the election. Yep. But we do tend to talk about local elections as if they're entirely a national story and the local bit is irrelevant.
There's one more bit of the national
story. Oh, no, I'm sorry, John. We haven't got there yet. No, okay.
There is one more bit of the story, which, again, is underappreciated. And again, one of the reasons why projecting particularly off these local elections is particularly problematic in terms of using levels. And that is we have to remember that Reform...
I was going to come to Reform at the next bit. I was getting there. Reform and Greens were there.
Rachel, ask your question.
I want to do mayors first. These are local elections, yeah, as well as national elections. Yeah. And we elected a whole series of mayors of cities. We elected a lot of local councillors. Yep. We also elected a lot of PCCs, which many people barely know exist.
Indeed.
So I suppose the first question is, how big a sign is there that people are voting for local councillors, one, the individual mayors, two, and the individual PCCs, three? Are they choosing candidates as well as just saying how they feel about the National Party? And how much has that changed?
Okay. I mean, on your first one, inevitably, you need to know a great deal about what's going on in the local area to really tease this out. But there was certainly one very dramatic example very early in the night. And that was in South Tyneside, where there was a bin strike going on. And the Labour Party lost support very, very heavily. They're the incumbent party there. So that's one very unusually stark example of a local issue making a difference. More broadly, there is evidence out there that voting in the mayoral elections was not necessarily the same as it was, would have been in a general election. The most obvious example is, in fact, Ben Houchen's support in Hartlepool. Yes, it's Hartlepool again that becomes important. And the reason why that is of interest is because Ben Houchen was first in Hartlepool, right? But then there was also a parallel police and crime commissioner election for Cleveland Police in Hartlepool. And the Conservatives were behind in Hartlepool for the PCC. And there was also a local election in Hartlepool. And the Labour Party did extremely well. They got most of the wards and they won back control. So there's a very, very particular example of how we know that Ben Houchen was basically outpolling his party. And there's also evidence out there from polls that were conducted during the election campaign, where they not only asked people how they were going to do in the mayoral election, but also how they were going to, would vote in general election. Sadiq Khan was not doing as well as his party. In contrast, Andy Street was certainly doing better than his party. So certainly one of the ways in which I think you can argue that Metro Mayor elections are doing what their advocates claim for it, which was indeed that they would no longer be contests just about party, is that and that they would be better at getting people to vote on candidates than our routine local elections. That is, I think, broadly speaking, confirmed by these elections. After all, in London, Ken Livingstone won in 2000 with as an independent. So that much is very clear.
And this is a pretty recent political experiment, the mayoralty. So, yeah. Or the mayoralties in most places, a bit less recent in London.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it does suggest that there is a potential for a countervailing set of political forces in the UK in a way that we haven't seen, or at least in England in a way that we haven't seen before.
Yes, I mean, certainly you are therefore looking at individuals whose ability to be elected to office doesn't simply rest on the popularity of their party, but also on their ability to be seen to voice the interests of their area. Now, that, of course, means that we can't necessarily assume that, for example, if we have a Labour government after November and we've got all those Labour mayors, that those Labour mayors will necessarily always say that, yes, what the UK government doing is right. Indeed, I think, Rachel, you've got some experience of this with a certain B. Johnson
well,
in London.
I think Boris Johnson is a great example of what the dance is going to be, because mayors simultaneously have an interest in being able to say that they've extracted lots of money from national government. And actually, generally, political parties quite like saying that they've done good things for mayors of their party. And Osborne and Cameron were, I think, pretty relaxed about Boris's antics because they liked being able to say that they'd done good things for London through a Conservative mayor, and they could see that that degree of independence was actually helpful.
Yeah.
So there is an extent to which Andy Burnham or Sadiq Khan or the others will want to be able to say that they've extracted more from central government so that people vote for them. That said, they also need to separate their identity from them, not least because at some point the next government's going to get really unpopular.
Yep.
And they want to be able to defend against it. The other big group, of course, that Labour will now have is a huge number of Labour councillors, all of whom will feel that Labour's job is to reverse the decline in local authority funding.
Indeed.
Of the last 10 to 15 years.
Indeed.
And according to what Labour is saying right now, that's not going to happen.
There's one other thing about both the mayoral elections and the PCC elections, we should just quickly point out. So I think mayoral elections, the advocates can reasonably argue that it is getting personality into local politics, bigger personalities. But when it comes to turnout, there's a rather more difficult story. Now, you know, those police and crime commissioning, the first contest we had back in 2012, where they were held entirely on their own, we had a 15% turnout. And the truth is the public really don't understand what these institutions are about. Now, so therefore we switched them to being on local election day. But of course, there weren't so many local elections taking place at the same time as there were 3 years ago when we previously had the elections. And the turnout, 24%, down from 33% last year. And in Wales, where previously the election was on the same day as the Senate election, so therefore you had a 45% turnout, in Wales, the grand total of 17% of people turned out for the election. So I think the honest truth is there will now be, I think, a reasonable question. Are PCC elections actually worth holding? The other thing I want to say, in London, you can argue that the mayoral elections are getting a higher turnout. And that, although it was down a little bit in London this time, that's still the case that the turnout in London is higher than London Borough. But the turnout in the metro mayors outside of London, just over 29%. What was the turnout in comparable wards in local council elections? 29%. It's not clear that in general, the mayoral model is necessarily bringing voters to the polling station.
And just to remind people, what's the average turnout for a general election?
Well, it always used to be above 70%. More recently, we're kind of happy if we get somewhere around 65%. The all-time low is 59%.
And plausibly, it's going to be quite low.
Well, I mean, my view is that it could
be. He hates making predictions.
Well, no. This is what I've said many a time. So, basically, we know from previous elections that one, people are less likely to turn out and vote if the opinion polls say it's all over by the shouting, especially if two, the electorate feel there isn't much difference between the parties, and of course, Labour have moved quite strongly towards the centre, and then three, a special extra ingredient of this election is that we've got incredibly boring political leaders, right? Neither Rishi Sunak, nor Keir Starmer, nor Ed Davey. And, you know, we've now got a new SNP leader in Scotland, John Swinney. But John Swinney, a bit more dramatic than Humza Yousaf, but, you know, still relatively grey character. We've got this incredible set of politicians who, in my view, are not very good at politics because they're not very good at articulating vision and setting a clear strategic direction and persuading the voters what they want to go. And they certainly, all of them, had a charisma bypass operation.
Let's talk about what happens before the election, very, very briefly. And then we should talk about reform and the Greens. Okay. So one question that we get asked a lot is, what will the parties do as a result of the local elections? How might they change? What would your advice be? And I think broadly our view is nothing is going to change. Labour is going to continue to say nothing about anything. And the Conservatives have no plausible alternative strategy than to hope that some kind of economic uptick gives them some kind of reward. So for all the sound and fury of the local elections and the fact that actual people were elected, the opinion polls haven't really changed, our expectation for the election hasn't changed, and nothing is going to change about how the country is.
I think the one caveat would be, I suspect that morale of the Conservative Party, already relatively low, is going to be even lower. And I guess the risk that the party will fight like ferrets in a sack before the election rather than leaving it till afterwards, that perhaps has increased somewhat.
I would say that was already pretty much a certainty, but you may be right.
Well, I mean, certainly we've seen two Conservative MPs defect, including one today, somebody who most of us would regard as pretty much towards the righter end of the Conservative Party, but, you know, there we go.
That's going to be a fascinating presence in the Labour Party, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, my question of the day is, what is the kind of Labour Party that doesn't have room for Jeremy Corbyn but has room for Natalie Elphick? Well, answers please on two sides of A4, but it does tell you how our politics is in a rather strange place, but there we go.
But let's zoom to after the election, because we should talk about the threat of reform, which has been shooting up the opinion polls, and the issue that reform tends to do best on, which is migration, legal and illegal, has been shooting up the issues tracker.
Yes and no.
Come back to the no bit. One, two, the Greens, both as a sort of young left-wing party, but also increasingly as an anti-Gaza party and independents associated with that. And usually the assumption is those people don't tend to do very well in general elections. Yep. They don't get first past the post. Yep. But they can cause really significant policy pressure.
Yep.
Tell us whether Reform and Greens surprised and how much pressure you think they are going to put on.
Okay, let me focus on Reform first. You can come back to me on the Greens. So these elections, we've seen the result in Blackpool South, but it's also clear in the local elections, Reform are stronger now than they were 12 months ago. They got about 12% of the vote on average where they stood, and on average, up 5-6 points.
While also having a leader with a charisma bypass.
Indeed, indeed. But crucially, Reform only fought in 1 in 6 wards. And you have to hang on to this because where Reform did stand, the Conservatives did not do so well. And in fact, whereas in general across local council elections, because most of them are dominated by these without Reform, there was basically no swing between Conservative and Labour since last time, slightly better therefore for the Conservatives in the opinion polls, where Reform stood, there was a swing to Labour net. And of course, one of the things we now know, according to the polls, is that 2019 Conservative voters are now more likely to be defecting to Reform than to Labour. So their absence on the ballot paper was potentially crucial. I then also say to you that if you actually look at what happened to the Conservative vote since 2021 in the wards where Reform fought, the Conservative vote is down by 19 points. Why does that matter? Because the decline in Conservative support in the opinion polls since May 2021 is 19 points. I suspect these local elections underestimate the difficulty that the Conservatives are in because of the absence of Reform on the ballot.
And their threat is from the right. Their threat is from Reform.
The problem is now they're being challenged on both sides. So they're losing about 1 in 6 of their 2019 voters to Labour, and they're losing about 1 in 5 to Reform. But whereas in the wake of the Liz Truss fiasco, they were only basically losing votes to Labour, they're now losing votes to both. Not necessarily because of immigration, by the way. Actually, Reform voters are also upset about the state of the health service. I think the way to understand it is that very often the issues that are push people away from the Conservative Party, which are essentially primarily the economy and the NHS and, of course, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss, those are quite common across the board. What then matters is where are then people's views? So people who are more liberal on immigration, people who've changed their minds about Brexit are going to Labour. People who've not changed their minds about Brexit, people who are concerned about immigration, even if the immigration is not necessarily the reason why they're defecting, it helps to identify the point to which they defect.
So it's plausibly going to be even worse for the Conservatives.
I suspect these local elections understate the difficulty they are currently in, assuming Reform remain on the ballot paper. And the other thing to remember about all of this, sure, Reform may be squeezed, maybe not. There's no guarantee. But even Reform at 5 or 6%, you have to remember Nigel Farage pulled the Brexit Party out of Conservative held seats in 2019. So even if Reform at 5 or 6% nationally, that's 6, 7, 8% in the average Conservative held constituency, up from zero. Whereas in Labour constituencies, it's going to be +2, +3, right? So Reform are almost bound to damage the Conservatives most where it will hurt the most.
So now let's talk about what might be worrying Labour, which is how many voters they're losing in particular places to the Greens and why.
Well, they're definitely broadly losing. Where the Greens do well, it is Labour and to some degree the Liberal Democrats who suffer, and it is not the Conservatives. So the Greens are definitely potentially a threat to Labour. But it's also true, to refer to your other point, that sometimes, so there's a general pattern of Labour's vote falling, indeed falling quite heavily in wards with a large Muslim population. And it's very clear that discontent about Gaza does cost Labour in these areas, not necessarily simply from people who identify as Muslim, but more broadly. And sometimes it was the Green candidate who profited. Elsewhere, there was an independent candidate or there was one of George Galloway's candidates on the ballot paper, and they're the ones who profited. So again, thinking about, how might parties change? Well, the pressure on Keir Starmer in his party to be more critical of the Israeli incursion into Gaza, that pressure is not going to diminish. And the Labour Party's kind of trying to work out how it can try to reconnect with some of those voters while at the same time retaining the much better relationship it has with the Jewish community. And keeping those two things together in the current context is inevitably now become much more difficult than perhaps Sir Keir Starmer anticipated 3 years ago.
Keir Starmer has identified or has driven very hard the idea that this is a change Labour Party. It is not the Labour Party of Jeremy Corbyn. It is running hard to the centre, to the extent that there are voters that it has in mind that it really needs to capture. It is more sort of old school working class or older Labour voters. So there is a risk that if they try very hard to adapt post the local elections because of Gaza votes, they undermine that basic message of a change Labour Party.
If you think it matters.
If you think it matters.
I basically take the view that the push factors are much more important than the pull factors, and that essentially we are where we are because of Boris Johnson and Partygate and Liz Truss and the fiscal event. These are the two defining events in this parliament. Those are the occasions on which the Conservative vote falls away. It's just never recovered. So Keir Starmer's change Labour Party is important insofar as it makes it one of the acceptable ways in which people might want to vote in order to express.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of ways in which he could have messed it up. It may be that he is lucky and that he is benefiting from anti-conservative sentiment, but there are also plenty of ways that other Labour leaders would have managed to convince the public that they still couldn't be voted.
That's perfectly reasonable. And the public aren't enthusiastic about the prospect of Sir Keir Starmer.
But they're not terrified of it.
Well, exactly. They can imagine him being in 10 Downing Street, even though they're kind of going, well, but that might be a bit of a yawn.
Sorry. So
she doesn't always use the laugh like this. You know, anyway.
It's because I get to see you in person, John. You seem so much more forbidding when you're in your office in Scotland.
We do sometimes.
Yeah.
Do it,
well, maybe you're just funnier today. I don't know.
Maybe it's because it's the end of the day. We usually do it in the morning.
We do.
Rachel
do it in the morning.
Isn't really awake. You know?
So the last thing that I think we should leave with, because I think the basic message that we said at great length is not a lot has changed.
Yep.
Like local elections, a lot of noise, not a lot has changed. The parties aren't going to do anything particularly different. We're still heading for the same general election we all thought we were. What I think is interesting, though, is the pressure and the areas of pressure that these elections suggest might appear after the next election. And that is both in terms of the incoming civil war in the Conservative Party,
yep,
about how hard it goes, yep, socially and culturally, and what its economic position is, but also within the Labour Party, who are now going to have even more political pressures from individuals on spending, from mayors, from local councillors, while having promised not to raise taxes, and from an increasingly discontented flank, one on Gaza, but also the kind of more Corbynite left-wing people. And those are going to be some of the tensions they're going to have to resolve within their first year.
Yeah, I mean, the first one is, as you talk, you've just rung a bell in my mind. Because the party finds itself where it is, and because the party, in many of its members' views, has not been true to its own values, therefore they blame their situation on that. In much the same way as the Bennites in the late 70s and early 80s said the reason why, you know, the Labour government came so seriously defeated in 1979 is because it accepted austerity, it accepted the IMF, it was too hard on the unions, etc., etc. It's incredibly similar. Of course, what is true is that historically we've tended to expect the Labour Party to be the party that is ridden by ideological faction, not the Conservative Party. But all of a sudden, the Conservative Party seems to decide to imitate the errors of their opponents.
And Labour is presumably going to get told that their big problem is that their coalition is simply too big, which I think, as political problems go, is a manageable.
It would be nice to have, yes.
So nice, I think,
and maybe something to talk about in another podcast is, you know, what does the prospect look for a Labour government after the election when, you know, is the Labour Party going to be able to do enough about the economy, the public services, the fiscal situation quickly enough before the electorate go, hang on, we voted for you because we thought you could do a better job than the last lot, but life seems to be just the same.
Well, I think that's the interesting question. We were talking about this before, which is they don't actually have very much expectation that this next lot are going to be much better. And is that going to be an advantage to Labour because anything they do is going to surprise them on the upside? Or are we just headed for the most politically angry and apathetic group?
But if they discover that their taxes are indeed going up, despite the fact that they weren't willing, their party wasn't willing to talk about it beforehand, that the waiting lists are not getting any shorter, that the economy is not growing, and that there are indeed tough public spending decisions, which the Labour Party did not talk about before the election, you've not laid the ground for ensuring that your electorate doesn't become disenchanted relatively rapidly afterwards. We'll be back in a moment to hear some questions from our audience.
First, though, a short break.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Questions.
Do you think the local election will impact when the date of the general election is?
You predicted November, didn't you?
Well, I mean, I think it finally stopped the speculation. But some of us have felt the endless speculation ever since the beginning. Oh, it'll be in May. Oh, now it might be July. Some of us have sat back and said, just look at the opinion polls. There is no, I mean, unless the government wishes to...
It's so absurd. It's ridiculous. Why did anyone ever think they would go in May?
Well, no, well, let me, I mean, I'm now going to be nasty to journalists. So sorry to the journalists in the room, right? But basically, there has been a co-conspiracy going on, right? It's partly in the interest of the Labour Party to say, oh, you know, there could be an election, because they want to create the impression that Sunak is frightened to have an election and therefore makes him look weak. And that's one of their lines. The government, you know, because we got rid of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, the government still has the advantage of potentially being able to spring a surprise. So they might want to create the air of uncertainty. They may want the opposition to be spending their money now rather than later, right? And then for journalists, of course, who occupy SW1 and spend their lives and earn their crust by talking to politicians, this is great. This will get clickbait. So basically, politicians find it in their interest to fuel the speculation, and journalists find it in their interest to act as the loudspeaker. And the rest of us sit back and go, 14th of November, 14th of November, 14th of November. There is, I mean, unless the Prime Minister wishes to commit political suicide early, as opposed to when the law will require him to do so.
Well, some people are talking about January.
Yeah, but the problem with January is that then you have to dissolve Parliament on the 17th of December, and therefore Christmas and New Year becomes part of the official campaign period. And I suspect I could think of a few things that Conservatives do can make things worse, but the idea of insisting that we should have Rishi Sunak instead of the Queen's message on Christmas Day probably would be the final curtain.
Rachel, polls suggest the Tories are behind Labour in every single age group apart from the over 65s. If you were in Downing Street and were asked to pitch policies that target the over 40s, what would you suggest?
Well, I guess the question is why is that? Over 65s, not all, but the ones who tend to vote Conservative, tend to be unhappy with the Conservatives about the NHS, but they tend to have relatively high assets and wealth, to have been squeezed less economically over the last couple of decades. They're not facing the housing crunch in terms of rental ownership, but they're also not facing the mortgage crunch that probably is the big legacy or partial legacy from Liz Truss. So you can't undo all of that. Like, that's why Rishi Sunak's an impossible position. He could not have come in and been like, I'm just going to reverse all the damage that was done by that previous budget. There's probably nothing he could have done. So, like, the glib easy answer is I would have gone a few years ago and not done that budget. But that's not a very helpful answer. I think that there is going to have to be an answer on home ownership and housing from the Conservative Party and indeed from the Labour Party. If not, it's going to come from someone. And then the second is a very, very boring answer, which is that the Conservatives have lost a reputation for basic competence, basic economic competence and basic public service delivery competence. There isn't a single policy that returns that, but they do need to have a view about how they're going to run public services and a clear view about what they're going to do with the economy, or they certainly aren't going to buy any of those people in.
I'm James Rose and I'm from Henley. A quick question. How important is sleaze when it comes to perceptions of political parties? Because that's something that kind of, is that something they can cut through and people can understand and go back to Bates' point about competence, you know, kind of, and trustworthiness?
Ethics is certainly a problem for the Conservative Party, because it's still true. I mean, Rachel ran this brilliant survey back in the August of last year, in which, first of all, that Public First asked people, what are the things you think the Conservative Party has done in the last, since 2010 that's been good? And there are a few things there. And then they asked people what they think the things are the worst. Now, even at that stage, it was number five on this, but it was the fifth most commonly mentioned thing. It was parties, all right? And that still just hangs around. You know, John Major talked about back to basics, and that all got interpreted in a certain way. So therefore, every Conservative MP who'd been found in a bed other than that of with his wife got into a lot of trouble. And every Sunday, we got a story after story. And that, together with Cash for Questions, undermined the Conservatives' image. And equally now, you know, Rishi Sunak promises he's going to be an honest government and he's going to have integrity. And shall we say, it seems to be more than more Conservative MPs who've fallen foul of Parliamentary Commissioner on Standards, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not been as big a problem for the Tories as it was in the 1990s, but it's certainly been hanging around them. And it certainly helped to undermine Mr. Sunak's attempt to, as it were, to try to draw a line under Boris Johnson. In fairness, Sunak was actually making progress in reducing the Labour lead. It's not just that Boris Johnson, has demonstrated the loose relationship with the truth, of which, you know, he had always been renowned, but that his party was not willing to distance itself from him when his peers had said, you know, actually he had misled us. Now, Tory MPs, when they effectively collapsed his government, had already indicated they no longer believed what he said, but they still weren't willing to vote against him. And the public picked up the message that you guys are not actually willing to acknowledge the mistakes that were made.
I guess there are two other quick points. The first is, it does mean that Angela Rayner and the story about her doesn't seem to have damaged the Labour Party at all yet, I guess because it's so complicated that people can't really follow it. Keir Starmer's behaviour towards the first senior politician, because there will be one who misbehaves, will matter a lot to his reputation. Yeah. I guess the second thing that's just worth saying is, beyond the specific behaviour and party gates, the most obvious, you know, we are in an era where the public generally have very low trust in politicians. And I think it's arguable, John, I don't know if you would agree with this, that we are still living with the legacy of the MP's expenses scandal. So that the general sets of events that make people mistrust politicians then breed into apathy, low turnout.
Well, Rachel, that's a brilliant point upon which to end, because that happens to be one of the subjects that I'm currently writing about for the next British Social Attitudes report, which is going to come out towards the end of June. And I think you and I have already booked that we will talk about it when that comes up. So keep on listening to Trendy in order to find out the answer to the question.
Thank you so much to all those people who made it into Tortoise's newsroom and to everyone listening online. That's it for Trendy this week. I'm Rachel Wolfe.
And I'm John Curtis.
Join us again next week. See you then.
Goodbye.
Tortoise.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.